it's been incredible to see how the Lord is using that kind of new frontier of community to really reach people that are far from God. It's all the benefits of a small church, tight community, and all the benefits of a big church, anonymity, all in the same context. I think that's kind of really interesting, and it provides a great front door for people who just kind of want to check it out and see what this is all about.
Everybody, we are here, we're together, and for those of you who are watching this, I'm so excited to welcome you to the virtual church gathering and in Malta. And with us, we've got just three really awesome guys who are going to be sharing with us in this first session on what exactly is a virtual church. Is it biblical? What does a virtual church look like? How did we get to virtual churches? And so I'm going to let them introduce themselves, starting with Jay Cranda. Jay, go ahead and just tell us a little about yourself and where you're at and how you're here.
Yeah, so I oversee the online ministry at Saddleback Church in Southern California and have been involved in some kind of form of online virtual ministry for the last 8 or so years, from small versions to it to like larger version. Been big part of just trying out different things, and have worked with and helped a lot of online ministries start to figure out what does a biblical model look like to amplify their existing ministry, and also figure out how to do it in a way that helps accomplish your organizational goals both locally and non-locally.
Awesome. Nick Runyon.
My name is Nick. I head Christian Vision for North America, and our big focus is a program we call CV Outreach that connects people that are searching for spiritual things online directly into the local church, using digital as a bridge. We also partner with Jay and people like Jay that are using digital church expressions, and just have kind of spent the last 10 years in that whole space. So happy to be here.
Great. And Nils.
So I was the founder, I guess, of onlinechurch.com as a community Bible church in San Antonio, Texas, about 8 years ago. So Jay and I got started in this space 8 years when the only model was lifechurch.tv back then, that we kind of learned from and tried to pay attention. We were figuring it out and have since. So we took a local church global there in San Antonio, and grew that, and I've since had the great privilege of consulting with a lot of ministries, helping coach around developing an online church or digital church community, and having a lot of fun leading the conversation with the Social Media Church podcast, where DJ Chuang started the conversation about digital church about 7 years ago, and it's been fun to see how that conversation has grown and developed.
Awesome. Which is a great podcast, by the way, Justin. If you and those listening aren't subscribed, you should consider doing so. Nils' co-host is the best.
I think he might actually be on the call. So, well, guys, one of the first questions that comes out is, you know, is there a biblical basis for doing church online? Is it a certainly the idea of virtual pastoring is nothing new. If we look at Paul and the epistles, and certainly Paul pastored virtually through the epistles, but in a digital era today, you know, advising a congregation is one thing, but actually being a digital congregation, how do you guys respond to questions about that?
You know, what I think about the birth of onlinechurch.com, I still remember our first moment, our first day of launching online church, and where it came about is I was literally a youth pastor in San Antonio, Texas, and was doing a lot on the internet. I'd been tinkering, and we were live streaming our college service and got a lot of attention for doing that. And Robert Emmett, the senior pastor of Community Bible Church, reached out to me and said, we're running 6 services a weekend. We've launched 10 campuses. It is exhausting, and we're out of parking spaces, and I'm hearing that the internet could be another campus for us and have no limits, like our building does. And I hear you're the guy that could maybe make that happen. And so we had a conversation literally 10 days after that conversation. We basically used a platform called Media Social. We uploaded our Sunday worship service to that platform, pushed play, updated, it was the executive team, sat in a room, pushed play, updated our Facebook status, had 800 people attend our first online church service, and four people got saved that day of the service. People were prayed for, people worshiped, there was community happening, we had a chat room, and I remember at the end of that conversation, there were two questions that were key questions that were asked. One is this church? And we asked her on the table, well, as we see church, there was fellowship, there was discipleship, there was prayer, there was worship, there's teaching. That's church as we see it. And the other is, do we want to invest in it? And at the end of the day, it was such a minimal investment for huge possibilities. And so the church took the step forward. We figured it out. We figured it out with baptism, communion. I think there are issues that don't translate. But at the end of the day, the lives changed is what really communicates to me that the church that is happening. And I would say beyond that, the community that is formed. I got a message today from one of our first members at Community Bible Church, whose wife is about to pass away. His church community continues to be 7 years after he got saved on online church. He was 68 years old when he first came to online church, got saved. His church community is still that online church community. They're journeying through this process of his wife passing away. That's church as I see it. So it's the real life activity and community that I've seen happen through these digital engagements that to me have communicated, yeah, this is church. And as I read the Bible, there's nothing that really negates that from my perspective.
Yeah. I mean, I would just add to that, you know, the tension is always, we tend to identify what church is to us personally, and then we see what's happening online. And sometimes there's a gap there. Sometimes that gap exists because we haven't experienced it. And sometimes that gap exists because something's not possible yet online. And we are at a tricky point, I think, in this timeline that there's a lot to come online. There's a lot of things that will happen over the next couple of years and decades that I think this question would be less of a issue. It will be less foggy. It'll be more clear. But when you look at the Bible, when you look at kind of as the early church was gathering, things like in Acts 5, when people are coming to Christ and they're growing and there's these habits that are emerging, like meeting on Saturdays and going to temple and then going to house, they're serving, teaching, loving each other, taking care of each other. And the question comes down to, like Niels was talking about it, is that church? And I think most people could go, yes, there are things that are happening online that are church, and then there's things that aren't happening online or maybe couldn't happen online. And that's where some of the theological tension comes down. I look at these churches like in Ephesus and in Philippi and Corinthians, Thessalonica and so forth. And I go, what Paul is talking about in kind of handling, those are real things that aren't too different from things that we do in our ministry and issues that are popping up. You're having somebody centralized, writing letters from afar, caring for, mentoring, and encouraging, and inspiring physical community. And the model that we've embraced with our ministry, and everybody's a little different, you're either an outreach ministry that you're just connecting people to local churches, or you're a online ministry that is encouraging people to start house churches. And I use that in a very broad way, that there's a lot there. But we started early on to say, hey, a lot of the theology doesn't really come into question when you have people starting things in their home. So people are watching something centralized like a service and accessing small group Bible study material centralized through the internet. And they are doing it locally. And now they're just a group of five people in their home from afar. And to say that's not church, then I would say then you got a problem with the way the New Testament kind of rolled out and how Paul did things. Yeah. And so we're again at this stage where in our ministry, I think there's a lot of stuff we've seen a lot of fruits. You know, I've had people travel to our church that we baptized. I've trained this past year. We've had eight people part of our community baptize other people hundreds of miles away from each other. And I start going again, I see this down the road and I'm like, you know what? I see this becoming more and more, but I can't, I would say that I think there's a lot that's possible. There's still stuff that's happening, but what's really important is the strategy and figuring how do you move people online to offline, or what does it look like in that model? But I definitely think there's stuff that's happening that I would call church for sure.
You know, when we look at the functions of the church, right, we can see out from the Great Commandment love the Lord your God, love your neighbor as yourself, right? You know, worship, adoration, love the Lord, love your neighbor, service, ministry. We look at the Great Commission, you know, going out unto the nations, right? Clearly that's evangelism, baptizing them, that's bringing them into the fellowship, and then, you know, teaching them all to obey, you know, the discipleship and formation process. So we can kind of see between those two, really the outline of the functions of the physical church. And a lot of those things we can replicate in the virtual church very well. The two big obvious kind of elephants in the room, though, would be communion and baptism. And certainly there are many folks who are trying different things to figure out what that can look like. For folks who are doing ministry in regions where there isn't a Lifeway or a Mardell's, or, you know, we're not going to be sending them, you know, the disposable do-it-yourself communion cups. What do you guys recommend, and how have you dealt with those issues, particularly in regards to baptism and communion?
Yeah, I think, and those continue, and I think some of it has to do with what certain alignments, you know, denominationally, and, you know, the Methodist denomination, for instance, has actually said it's a violation of their whatever book of discipline by doing communion online. And so I think different denominations perceive it differently. What we did at Community Bible Church is we literally said, go and get something to represent at the end of, you know, later in the service, we're going to have communion. Go and find something where you are to represent Jesus' body and Jesus' blood. And so here we're going to do it with a wafer cracker, and we're going to do it with grape juice. We had people that in the chat room, we kind of made it something fun. Say, type what you're using, you know, and it would be Oreos and milk, you know, there would be different things. And I think some people could naturally get offended by that, but for them, that was still that representation. And I'll tell you the beautiful thing that we saw we do it once a month, we do communion online, is that people were experiencing communion from Pakistan and from the Philippines and from Seattle and San Antonio simultaneously in the same worship experience. And the community that happened out of that was very beautiful and biblical from my perspective and how I perceive communion. So it was a very meaningful, probably more meaningful for me, communion experience than in a room with other people. So that's how we did that. And then baptism, we got creative. We saw it as a public proclamation of your faith, and then the water symbolizes the washing away of our sins. And so we did it with Skype back then. That was the video conferencing tool that we used. And so we would Skype. And I remember we had a gentleman whose wife poured a bucket of water over him to represent that, because he wasn't actually able to even fit into a tub. And so, unique situation, but we used the technology. It was possible. It was a public proclamation, and we had the symbol of the water washing away the sins. And so that's how we chose to do it. I think it does vary based on denominational or even your own kind of personal convictions there. But I think there are ways as we think through it and understand it, of how does this translate, or you literally travel there. So Jay's got some incredible stories of how they've worked through those things there at Saddleback.
Yeah. I mean, like, so I think generally with an online ministry, you kind of have these three audiences where you have those who live local to your church, and it's real easy. You're literally just amplifying an online ministry, just kind of becomes this front door, this first impressions ministry for a local church, obviously, or a local organization. If a local organization has a headquarters and you got people local, you know, I've talked to organizations all around the world that do this. It's like, oh, just come here and we can handle this thing, whatever that thing is, like baptism, sacraments, so forth. Then you have people that live far from you that can't really drive. And then you have the option, you connect them to another organization that has a headquarters or some kind of connection, or another church. And that becomes real simple. But then you have the people that are far from you that want to engage with you on some level, and they're taking that deeper commitment. So it either comes down to you drive them to your physical, or you let them fully participate online, or you encourage some kind of offline community where you have them start something. And so it comes down to, what do you allow in these three avenues? And so for us, like Neil was talking about, you know, we're kind of coming out of the Southern Baptist you know, convention. We definitely believe some things about baptism, like for sure the water over the bucket would not flow. I'm going to use flow very deliberately here. At our, you got a little Ezekiel temple there vision, it would not happen. But the idea for us is, we're not going to take our foot off of the gas of the whole idea of physical community, that just because you're online does not mean you get, you know, you don't have to participate in that. Now, that doesn't mean we're not okay with, it doesn't mean that we're just going to leave somebody there. We just understand somebody might watch online for a season for all sorts of reasons that we're not going to judge. We're not going to get in the middle of it. Just, we come on the back end and go, hey, you can't participate. Let's say if you want to get baptized and you're far, if you have somebody locally, we'll train them. If you want to participate in communion, we'll train your group to do this. And we'll come on the back end pastorally and say, hey, it's okay if you don't want to participate in physical community, but eventually we want to help you get there. And the question comes down to, are you wanting, what can you compromise, or what can you kind of figure out? Because there are really unique circumstances why people watch online. And that's where it gets tricky, is do you change what you believe on this, or do you reevaluate based off this circumstance? And I think every encounter has to be different, but I don't think that means that you compromise what actually the Bible says. And I think that's the tension of, like, sometimes, like for in our example, like we would actually tell somebody, hey, the Bible, we believe the Bible would say kind of biblical baptism is full immersion. And so we would say, hey, because this is not a salvation thing, it's okay if you don't get baptized. Like, you're not going to heaven. And we have that hold to the high standard of what this means. Now, I also don't believe that the Bible says that whatever that, if somebody does get a bucket pour, I think there's a good chance that God sees that and says that does count. And so that's where you hold this tension where you what do you believe on this? And I think online ministry, one of the trickiest things is that this is where a lot of the tension comes down to, is reevaluating some of these things. And you either have, you draw a line in the sand, or you kind of start to experiment. And I actually think experimenting is really helpful in this space. And you know, Niels and I have a lot of these conversations. I have friends that have done very similar things, and I would disagree with them. But you know what? Like, that's the thing, is that I also don't think that God's looking at this going, hey, stop. I think when you're a forerunner, when you're kind of going into a new land, there is a lot of unclearness, and people have to figure this out. And I think there's a biblical model that is coming out through all that.
I think too, I mean, you look at 2,000 years of the church, we're still figuring out church, you know, as we know it. You see it through the New Testament. It was a mess and a mess and a mess, and it's still a mess today. I don't think anybody has really figured out this is the perfect church. We're figuring out, what does the church in America look like? What does the church in the Middle East look like, and the church in India look like? And what does the church in 2019 look like? And even as the expression of online church, we're figuring this out, and it will continue to be messy, and we will never figure it out 100%, but we will continue. It will continue to mature. And I think there's things that we're going to understand. And there's things, I think Jay and I could probably tell you a dozen things we just laugh at. Like, remember when we did that? That was ridiculous. But we figured it out.
It's kind of a flawed question, actually, is what I wanted to mention. Like, the word church is, when you say, is virtual church church, that's so loaded. And what these guys are talking about are all of the nuance and the details within that. And so I think if we can, for people engaged in this conversation, if we can kind of encourage them to think through, and I think you touched on it, Justin, I want to go back to it because I think it's foundational to this conversation, the Great Commission and the Great Commandment. So, you know, love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself and go and make disciples. And those things are key elements in which all aspects of church are embodied within. And it really, a lot of it comes down to obedience. And so, you know, because God said, or Jesus said, if you love me, you'll obey my commandments, you know, so love God, love your neighbor. And we go evangelistically and make disciples out of love for God and love for our neighbors. What did Jesus command us to do? So things like baptism, things like communion, those are part of the commandments. And how you handle those, I think, are probably the more important questions. And what Jay's just described is, and Nils has supported, there's all sorts of different ways that those can be handled on a case-by-case basis. So when ministries or when churches are thinking about, should we, it's always easier to say no. Yeah. And I would always, you know, if people have that conviction, good for them. I think that's great to say, no, we're not going to cross that line. But you also shouldn't be afraid of it because of the technology. Technology is just the current expression which we're exploring some of these ideas. And I think if we can foundationally say this is what we believe baptism is, or how it should be administered, or how we're going to help facilitate that, then those are the issues that I think should be discussed. And then when you get into that conversation, you've moved beyond, is this church or not? It's how do we help people love God, love their neighbor, and make disciples in these different situations, in this different context. Mm-hmm.
I think when we also look at the issue of human agency and where we exist as people, so much of our daily lives are spent on these, right? Mm-hmm. I think the latest data that's come out is that we'll averagely spend 5.4 years of our lives on social media on a mobile device. That's the average, at least in America, that's the average latest update. And so I think one of the questions is, how can we as the church be and have an incarnational presence in the digital space, whether it's virtual reality or whether it's online or even in social media, where, you know, through human agency, we are bringing Christ into those communities. We are Christ in terms of image bearers in that virtual world or in that Facebook community or the LinkedIn group that we're a part of. And how are we bringing aspects of the church there? I think that's an important question that we have to realistically take a step back and consider the applications of that. But kind of like you're saying as well, there's a tremendous amount of opportunities. What are some of these new opportunities? I mean, I feel like a lot of people have said, I think some of the detractors have said online church is just church for the lazy, like it's a back door into the church. But I think, you know, I forget if it was Jay or Nails, but one of you guys nailed it. It's actually becoming the front door for a lot of people. It's not just a back door for the lazy. So what are some of these new opportunities and things that are emerging regarding online church that you guys see?
Well, one that I'll share is I'm happy to serve on the board of VR Church with Pastor DJ Soto. And, you know, this is a weekly meeting in virtual reality. I see Nils has an Oculus Go on his desk in the back there, in the background. Yep. And, you know, I've got one of those, and it's, you know, Sunday evening at 6 p.m. my time. I can log on through my Oculus Go and attend church. And it's one of these things that's difficult to explain, but quickly experienced. It's true community. Now, DJ and his family, like, they go to church, real church, if we want to call it that in this conversation. And then they minister to people in virtual reality, and it truly is a ministry. Like, when you attend VR church, there's regular attenders, there's new visitors to church, there's a worship time together, there you can talk back, like, to the preacher, raise your hand, like, through emojis, you can, you know, show that you're, like, worshiping, which to the uninitiated sounds really weird and scary. But I'll tell you what, like, it's been incredible to see how the Lord is using that kind of new frontier of community to really reach people that are far from God. It's all the benefits of a small church, tight community, and all the benefits of a big church, anonymity, all in the same context. I think that's kind of really interesting, and it provides a great front door for people who just kind of want to check it out and see what this is all about.
You know, I heard Jack Dorsey recently in an interview say that he's the founder of Twitter, and he said, I think people would better understand the internet if they saw it as a place rather than a thing or a utility. And he said, we live in a space where we are physically present in our physical space, or we are mentally present in our digital space. We rarely are both, but a lot of times they overlap and we shift back and forth. But when we begin to see things, and he was speaking at the time about cryptocurrency, that the internet needs a currency, you know, and so the internet being a place needs a way for people to transact in that space. And at the end of the day, the internet needs a church, and the internet, because people go and do life on the internet, and just like they do life face to face, and it is different. And I think that there are all kinds of your ecclesiology of how you understand church to be, and the church that best serves you and your family and is the place that you're engaged in. I really subscribe to the principles of Rick Warren with discipleship and fellowship and worship and those core principles of in the purpose-driven church. And so as you begin thinking about the opportunities, if you put evangelism, you know, in a window. And Nick is doing the most incredible digital evangelism that's really, I would almost describe it the best evangelism I've ever seen, period. In you know, maybe the 2,000 years of what the internet provides from an evangelism perspective, it's incredible. But then you add discipleship. The internet provides incredible discipleship tools of people being able to engage in God's word, of what's happening on YouVersion, or in engaged in Bible study, in community, or right now media, for, you know, bringing Bible studies to everyone more easily. There's incredible tools, or fellowship, the way people are able to connect throughout the week, more connected than ever to their small groups because of Facebook and Facebook groups, or and really the way that we have the tools that the internet provides, I believe can enhance both the local church and now these virtual digital experiences. And I think you can get into nuances, whether you want to call it church or not, call it ministry if you don't want to call it church. But it's happening. And those core principles of what we call church, and whatever area or ministry that you're called to in that, whether it's evangelism or discipleship, or you're really called to connect people in fellowship, there are possibilities and opportunities in pretty much every facet of the internet, in the place of the internet to do those things.
Yeah, and I'll just add just real quick is it essentially, I just see it as a way to capitalize on more time and reach more people. So essentially a church usually is open only a few hours a week for people, and you have this 24/7 thing that's always going, and it's a no-brainer. Now we see this as, oh, the online store is a way to kind of a fusion strategy of moving people. You know, it's like Walmart started doing this thing near us where you buy it on the store and then you could do a drive up pickup. And you know, my family, my wife, we have three kids, and so it's really helpful to just in rain come up and, you know, we don't have to do this. And there's this fusion strategy of a physical store and an online store. And the local church, I think most churches see the first step is to do that, is to see this fusion of not trying to take it away. And I don't think, and I think this is where we get so wrapped up, because you use a word like virtual and you have this like metaverse Ready Player One thing that goes in your head. And it's, you never, like, there's no reason to say virtual has to kind of be void from the physical. And that's where I would always lean. Like, I don't see that in our model. And I don't really see that anywhere. I just see people leaning into reaching people that are unconnected. And this is where the VR churches and so forth, they're reaching people that are not going to church because there's something down the street. They're reaching people that would never walk into a church. Yeah. And at the end of the day, and I know this working at a large church and having friends at other churches, and you know, you see churches doing things, and a lot of times what you have is you have people on the sidelines from like their ivory towers going, that's unbiblical. And really, it's really easy to call out something, you know, it's really easy never to, you know, offend somebody if you never leave your house. And at the end of the day, a lot of people that are outreach focused are willing to get their hands dirty and willing to go out and tell people. And this is where I just think at the end of the day, just kind of echo what Niels and Nick were saying, it's evangelism. At the end of the day, you can reach people in an unlimited way and empower and decentralized church. And an unbelievable magnitude. And you could both strengthen the local church and start virtual churches. It's the whole thing. It's no reason why it has to be one thing. And the internet ultimately is this physical and digital thing. It's this thing that's like in the cloud virtually, but it's also, the internet is dependent on physical servers around the world. So it's the same thing to me, internet, but it's just this reachability that's crazy.
Well, we talk about on our team that discipleship happens in the context of relationship. And I think everybody listening to this has an experience where it's like, what is this? Like, we've traveled together, we've worked together in the same offices, we all know each other, and this is a virtual conversation. It's just relationship. So there's no longer, and I agree with what Jack Dorsey says, it's a place. And I watched Ready Player One on the plane last week, Jay, and a line stood out to me, where in the movie, at least, where they say the oasis is where everybody is, so that's where we go. And it's like, okay, it's just relationship. It's no longer online or offline. People are just aligned. And so if that's the context in which we're working and trying to minister, then you can use these tools, I think, more freely. I think it gives us license and liberty to say, how can I do this in order to reach and really engage and minister to people, sharing the gospel, discipling them. Things like baptism, communion, we can work that out. I love the model that Jay is doing, and actually we lean heavily on him within our ministry whenever we can't connect people locally mostly because of lack of location signals. I don't know exactly where they are. I'll put them into his process because he has a well-defined, systematic approach to leading people into physical community, which I think is, you know, akin to church planning, what you're doing. I think in your language, you're calling it like small groups or home groups type of thing. But it's, you know, you've got these fellowships all over the country, all over the world. That's a vibrant expression of church that begins with an online touch point. But really, it's all rooted in relationship. That's the thread that ties it all together.
Jay, can you expound on that just for a little bit? Because, you know, all of the discussions around virtual church, online church, digital church, whatever language you want to use, at the end of the day, we want to see an off-ramp to a physical connection when possible and if possible. And in some countries, in some places, that's just not possible. We get that. But you've got a great system in place at Saddleback. Can you kind of just fill us in a little bit on that?
Yeah. So for us, you know, I kind of joke that our online ministry has, compared to a local church, we kind of have this leaky funnel where ultimately I want people to come to know Jesus and come to live for Jesus. And obviously that process is never done on this side of eternity. So that sanctification is this ongoing thing. And there's some best practices the Bible is pretty clear on. And in our model, what that means is somebody watches online, they attend this service online virtually, either on our church online platform, on YouTube, on a podcast, and they hear a pastor, usually me, say, hey, we want you to take your next step. And they're encouraged to fill out a digital response card. When they do that, we start having conversations with them where they're at. And usually it comes around either plugging them into a local church if we know something nearby, or engaging them in our ministry if they're not near one of our campuses or a partner church. And we have churches all around the world. So I'm very aware of kind of where churches are. Now, unfortunately, I think most people think there's a church just down the street, and because that's what I have. Well, there might be a church down the street, but that doesn't mean it's a biblical church. Church is a very vague thing now in culture. And so that can mean all sorts of things. And for us, usually that means, you know, looking at beliefs, they go visit. We ask them what happened and kind of do some verification. And then if there isn't something, they take this, we have this online class that's kind of, in a way, it's like a catechism. It's kind of our essential beliefs. In each class, we verify different things. And at the end of that class, we verify salvation. We help them become members of our church. We do membership at our church. We help them get baptized. And right out of that, they learn the importance of being in community. We get them in a small group. And we do online groups that just meet online. And we do home groups where they meet in a home with other people. And then ultimately, in our model, we ultimately want everybody to end up in a home group face-to-face. But what's unique in our kind of situation is that I'm okay with somebody starting an online group or engaging online on a group like this. But I know, and this is where I think this is what happens over time, is going to a physical church or participating in physical community is ultimately a value add. Like, they have to understand why it's important. And what happens in our virtual ministry and our online, I don't like that word virtual, but in the online world, what happens is people start to realize, like, oh, that's important. And they'll email us after engaging in our ministry for a year and a half. They'll go from not knowing Jesus, knowing Jesus, taking our classes, engaging in an online small group. And they go, you know what? I found a local church down the street for me, or I found a church an hour away. I think I'm going to start going there and not engage in your online ministry. And they think that's a bad thing. And they don't realize that's been the trick the whole time, that we're trying to educate them why. And I want them to be reading they're reading Timothy and they're reading about the importance of this and that. And I want them to have that conviction. And our ministry has all been tuning up for that. Or at the end of the day, they're in a remote country far from us where maybe Saddleback doesn't have a physical campus. They go, you know what? I don't have a church, but I think I'm called to plant something here. And mm-hmm. And for us, that's starting a small group. And so that's a maturity thing. That's a come and see, come and die. And that's not immediate. You know, I think of the disciples. It took 3 years, and once Jesus gets convicted and is about to get crucified, everybody scatters. And it's not till the resurrection that they really get the severity of, like, oh, this is real. And in our online ministry, we help them engage that way. And at the end of this, it's either go to a church or start a local fellowship we call small groups. And usually it's that time of maturity that leads them into doing one of those things. And we're okay. And that's what a church is. It develops people to figure that stuff out.
And both you and Nils have experienced where these online groups and plants and communities have started in other countries and cross-cultural contexts, where it's not just within the context of an American church or a suburban American church, but really kind of globally minded. Can you share just a little brief highlight about that?
Yeah, I mean, I at the end of the day, I what I have noticed is, you know, English is pretty abundant. So people speak English, they follow that, you know, the movies they watch and so forth. And so usually what we have found in our context, and I've seen it in other contexts too, where this model of reaching people in their language, engaging them. I mean, here's the deal. Church, you go back to Acts, like, this was a multicultural empowering thing. All this stuff is not, you know, I think about all the internet trends that have happened over the last couple of years, the Arab Springs and so forth, that this is a universal thing where people are using this to decentralize relationships in some powerful ways and leveraging it. And so for us, you know, we've had people start small groups all around the world. And what happens in our context, though, we still are primarily reaching those who are speaking English, but I've seen other ministries do similar things where they are started to start online services and starting remote groups and starting to engage this. I think there's still a lot that needs to happen in this area, but I've been really encouraging that. I know this model is not unique.
You know, I think even as I'll get practical too with how what we experienced with online small groups with online church, we experiment with so many different things. But one of the things that was very interesting to me is when we shifted from trying to do real-time small groups with video conferencing, which we found to be the deepest level of connection, and we shifted to Facebook groups where it was basically 24/7. It was almost like a shift in mindset of, you know, we think of small groups, and a lot of times what we did is we took what we did on our physical campus and tried to bring it to the internet. But the 24/7 engagement really allowed for ongoing conversation and community. So it's as if the small group never ended. It wasn't a small group that meets at a certain time. It more became a small group that is always meeting. And then typically what we ended up doing is merging the two of, you know, we have this small group that's always meeting on a Facebook group, and there is going to be a time in each of those groups that they're meeting in face-to-face. But because you have real-time access to the curriculum, people would in our physical church gather because there was only one DVD, and you had to all get around that DVD around the television at the same time. And there wasn't a tool email was the tool for communication, but it wasn't a good, email's not a good tool for ongoing conversation. That gets annoying when everybody's reply all the time and it just loads up your email. And so social media, Facebook groups became this core place for ongoing community to happen. And I think the internet provides new opportunities for us to really sometimes shift away from the function of how we're always used to things happening and really get philosophical as to why are we doing small groups and how can we do it maybe even more effectively online. Now it's going to be different, and there's going to be different things that are more effective and some that are less, but I think the different tools and allow us to do it differently yet accomplish the same goal at the end of the day.
So, you know, the conference that we're participating in is really geared mostly towards folks in the Middle East and North Africa. And if they were to say, you know what, I'd like to start something as an online church or virtual church, what would be the first thing you guys would recommend, assuming that this is a ministry who maybe is already doing discipleship, church planting, maybe they're in media, but they're not doing online church right now, but they're saying, I want to start. What would you recommend?
I have two things. One, I'll get practical with the recommendation, but the first thing I would just suggest is don't wait till you have it all figured out to start. And so I think this is almost the core to this conversation is there. Every new answer you find creates two new questions in this space. And so by the time you figure it all out, you will have missed the opportunity, and then you will never figure it all out. So don't wait till you figure it all out. That's just a piece of advice. But the practical side is, from a technology perspective, I think too many people have had this idea of how technology should work, and they think they need to build the technology to do the ministry that happens. My advice is to use the technology that exists and piggyback on that and focus on the ministry, because Facebook has created great technology. Twitter has created great technology. Periscope, and you know, like you go on and on. Google has created incredible technology. Zoom, there is incredible technology that's very simple, that's very powerful, that's very affordable, that you can use. I think really obsessing over the technology is the biggest mistake. Focus on the ministry opportunity is really pick the technology you're going to use. And build the strategy off of that. But I think people get too obsessed with trying to build technology. And I think that's a big mistake.
Obsessing over the technology is always the mistake. People always start a technology. Go back to the top end, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say the way to start would actually to just line up, or like write on your whiteboard, get your team together, volunteers together, and write down like the seeker journey of how does somebody start with your ministry, and what is the end in mind, and what's the actual funnel? Like, write down the steps and just ask the question, how do you decentralize this? Like, go away from, well, and this is where most, and this is kind of at the fault, I would say, of not fault, that's a strong word, but like with seminaries, is that we're trained to, hey, everybody come in here and I'm going to teach you live now, and this is how you disciple people. And so, which the irony obviously is Jesus, you know, the Bible is this decentralizing thing, but you know, whatever. But the whole point of that is start to figure out, okay, step one, oh, we engage them by having this event. Well, can we decentralize that? We engage them by talking to them. How do you decentralize communication? There's all sorts of things there. How do you decentralize our courses? Is there like an LMS that we can use? How do you decentralize? And you start having these stages. But what's key is think about it in the context of your organization. How do you decentralize your organization? And that's the most powerful thing about the internet.
Why? Why is that important, Jay?
Why is that important? Well, because you could reach more people. I think at the end of the day, you can reach more people. And that, you could reach more people. You could train more people. You can empower more people.
Aren't I losing control if I make it decentralized?
Oh, Nick.
No, I'm serious. I think
Yeah.
Because
you're right. I mean, like you're right in the sense that there are things like Neil's talking about, new problems you have to figure out. But if you're an evangelist, if you're somebody who wants to reach more people, again, it's always easier to, I like one of my favorite quotes from my pastor was, he said his favorite size of his church was like 200 people because he knew all the names. And once it got bigger, he lost control. And so some people would say, well, shut the doors. Stop inviting people. But he couldn't do that. He said, it's growing. Let's figure it out. And you have to reorg and you have to, and that's the messy part of handling growth. Everything's real easy when you got 5-6 people. It's like, this all makes sense and it's in your box. But the whole point, lean into faith, figure out, no, what doesn't make sense? And that's growth. And that's growth on the ministry, and it's growth on you as the leader too.
I think, I mean, coming back to how is this like biblical with this is, I feel like Acts, the book of Acts could almost be like the decentralization, you know, of Christianity, of at the end of the day, Christ is at the center, you know, but the organizational structure of how that movement goes out was decentralized from the beginning in many ways. It's really interesting, Jay, your perspective of how can you just analyze decentralization of this and allow the Holy Spirit in God to ensure that some of those things that you lose control of that align. I mean, there's a tension there. There's a balance, but it's a really good challenge.
Well, these guys are practitioners in this space. I'm more on like the strategy side and parachurch, which by the way is not a dirty word. I believe in the true meaning, like with church, para church. There's my Greek for you, Jay. But I think from like a strategic point of view, my answer to your question, Justin, would be start with the why. Like, why are we going to do this? Like, what's my guiding vision? And can I be rooted in my why so that when you face these challenges, you can see them, they are going to be difficult, they are going to be present, but you can see them as opportunities. So it's like, if I am an evangelist, like Jay's talking about, and that's my driving motivation, my calling, then I can always kind of come back to that as an anchor and help me work through some of these things. And it's not about the technology. It's about, like, technology carries the strategy and process, you know? So start with strategy and process.
I would like to just add real quick. I was just having a conversation yesterday going on the, it's not about the technology. I get asked all the time about online groups, how to do online groups, all that, because we do online groups at my church. And I always tell people, you're asking the wrong question with how to do it. Like, what platform? They always think there's this secret platform. And it's like, no, you just want people to meet with other people. Let them pick the platform. And I think there's this natural tension in this conversation where you want to know about the technology because you want to control it. And I think that's the hardest part about this whole conversation, is it's actually leaning more into, like, how do you do church? What is church? And so, and it's just going, hey, you just want people, you've got to know your strategy. And I think at the end of the day, this whole conversation really echoes that a lot of people start to realize, well, oh, maybe my church is more than just teaching every week. Maybe my church is more than just the potlucks. And like, yeah, I think it actually just highlights problems we have and what we actually think biblical church is. And I love this conversation, but I just had to add that real quick.
If I could brag on Jay for a minute, that people will often ask me because I know Jay and they watch Jay from the outside, how does is he serious? Like, does he really have 1,000 small groups? What technology they do? So they, like, what they must have their own custom technology that allows this to happen. And I tell them all the same thing. The secret to Saddleback's online ministry success is Jay. Now there's a lot of factors I think in there, but it's Jay has been so open-handed in how I would say he built for scale, which can often sound like a dirty word in the church, but at the end of the day, he built for limitless possibilities of God, where often leaders minimize ministry opportunities because they want to control those situations. And because he built systematically at an opportunity that allows leaders to grow and to develop and to scale limitless ministry possibilities, he is one leader. You know, now he's got a bit of a team, but for so many years, it was just Jay, and Jay had over 1,000 small groups plus other things in his plate because he managed in a decentralized way. And so he says this, but he models it, and it's unbelievable.
Let me just kind of toss in the notion that in the Middle East in particular, one of the questions that I know I've gotten already from folks is to say, well, you know, we'll need training. We have leaders who may not be skilled in social media or in technology. But I think there's also a tremendous opportunity to empower and raise up a new generation of what I would call digital natives, right? So it's you know, PC nice speak for younger folk, that 35 and under who are doing Facebook every day. They are periscoping and using Twitter and LinkedIn, and they're using this technology in every facet of their life, from dating all the way to conducting business and education, and using those natural gifts and abilities and skill sets to really bless the church and to help grow the church. What's your experience been in terms of volunteer recruitment? And if you wouldn't mind sharing, I know with DJ, and we're going to talk with him a little bit later in a session this afternoon, but with DJ, most of his volunteers actually tend to skew older because that's kind of new set for the technology. But for you guys, what have you found as far as your volunteers and those who are involved in your ministry? What age group are they, and how have you gone about recruiting them?
I'll jump into this first. You know, I would say with online church, we had a huge diversity of volunteers. And I would say it didn't vary so much from our physical church. Of what I found to be is a lot of younger leaders were fairly flaky and they understood the technology, but they would show up or not show up. You know, like I just had some issues with some of our younger leaders who I think I expected to be my core base of volunteers. The best volunteers I had in with online church were women over the age of 50. My best volunteer was a woman who was in her early 70s. She recently passed away, actually. But she had time, and she was willing, and she had spiritual maturity. I remember when she first joined our ministry, she's like, "I have an iPad in an internet connection. Will that work?" And I said, "Absolutely." She's like, "If you can teach me how to use this," and I you know, it's simple. The technology is not that complicated. We taught her in about 30 minutes everything she needed to know, and she became. And then I remember within a week, she's like, "Wait a minute." So I'm like a digital missionary. And she started, basically created that name for herself, and went, and she ended up starting a small group in Nepal, where she pastored 20 women in a, you know, and on Saturday mornings, she'd get up at 4 a.m. on Saturdays to lead through Skype a small group in Nepal. And so yes, for me, it was women over 50 dominate, because, and they're also becoming more intuitive or natural with how they engage online, but it was not younger, especially when it came to online interactions.
The big thing in that I've noticed is would just be that, you know, certain people are called to certain generations. And I think it really comes around the leader and your team. And unfortunately, what I noticed early on with a lot of ministries and even with my thought process is a lot of people think, oh, online is this easy, cheaper startup type of thing that you can get around, but you can't fake the development of people. And so people serve because you're pouring into them, you're developing them, you're spending time with them. You know, I think about it when I came to Christ, you know, like I had a pastor that I met with and we spent time. And so that's why it's really important when you're doing this online, you don't go cheapskate on all that stuff. You got to have, so like something I always tell people who are starting online ministry is like, it's really hard to learn how to care for people when you can't just go get a cup of coffee with them. And so like I just told this to a pastor, you know, yesterday, I would start having monthly meetings on Zoom with your leadership team. And so just start monthly meeting and recruit people. So when you're talking to people, hey, come to this thing, we're meeting Sunday at 3 o'clock. And the idea is start regularly gathering and start building community, and on that, have fun together, teach, prayer requests, start building the team culture, and volunteers start to develop. And a lot of times that recruitment base comes out of your heart and who you reach and who you can have influence on, and ultimately your pastor's influence. And so like, I know our church, we reach all sorts of age demographic. I would say that like my core demographic, and I think it aligns with my pastor and kind of when we got planted, is going to be more 40s to 50s is going to be our core. 14
hours.
But I have people all around the world, and really in our context, it's less about age. It's more about geography is the most diversity. And that's the most encouraging in our sense. But you have to still develop and do all the stuff that it takes to plant a ministry or a church. And I think that's really key. And that comes from being consistent and having a pastoral presence.
I want to throw in here one thing just on volunteers, Justin. So I used to lead an organization that had thousands of online missionaries, and overwhelmingly it was 50 plus men and women. But I would agree with what's been said that I think the Lord is using women in a special way, with time, availability, wisdom, empathy. They tend to be more empathetic, and really can connect, you know, through this digital type of conversation. But both Nils and Jay are on this call because they have leaders who allowed the young guy to run. And I think that for the leaders in the room that are looking at online ministry, so one of the reasons why the younger volunteers, I think, are more flaky, and I had the same experience, is because there wasn't enough runway to keep them engaged. Younger believers have energy. I'm pushing 40, and I was talking to my wife the other day about, like, man, the energy I had when I was 20 is way different than today, you know, and I still think I'm kind of young. So I'm looking forward, you know, and having those conversations with my dad too, which I think are interesting. But like, for the younger leader who has a vision for it and has the energy, and they're going to make mistakes, it's going to be messy, but if you can give a person like that some runway and space to try to figure this out, they're going to take an online expression of your ministry to places that you can't imagine. And I think that's really a key thing. You know, Nils and Jay are the product of good leadership that gave them a lot of leeway. And I just always like to encourage people to consider that. Like, if you have people like that, that have a vision for it, you know, don't say no, say, okay, let's go. And here's some parameters that we need to stay within, but run as fast as you can and just see what the Lord does with it.
I will add to that though, that one of the mistakes I see in a lot of churches, and I think this happens across the board in parachurch organizations as well, is when it comes to online ministry, a lot of times people just throw the youth pastor at it or throw the young guy at it because he must or she must be good at it. Spiritual maturity and leadership is the key to ministry success in any aspect of ministry. And so it is so little to do with the technology and really even the media itself. It's so much to do with just ministry leadership is what drives success. And that's empowering volunteers, training volunteers, building the ministry systems. And so that's just a mistake that I've seen happen many times over.
Amen. Well, gentlemen, we've got just about 5 more minutes left. And so I wanted to ask each of you, what would be, I know you all have either websites or resources or articles or podcasts that I know I'd love to be able to point participants here in the gathering to. And so if you would just, where can people go to find out more information, to dig deeper on their own, or to hear more from you on this topic?
Yeah, you can go to jcranda.com. This is so self-promotion-y. I don't like this at all, but jcranda.com. I blog and write about whatever I'm thinking, both good and bad. There it is.
And there's a number of videos. In fact, that's where I learned that Jay is not Jay's first name. So you'll have to dig through the video to find that. But great articles, resources there at his website. And certainly we'll have links to his website on the Virtual Church Network page following the conference and the gathering.
I also recommend jcranda.com. jcranda.com is awesome. So I will additionally, it is the best platform for around virtual church, online church content, period. That's Jay's central focus. I do want to plug the podcast that Nick and I co-host, Social Media Church, socialmedia.church. And if you go back to the, Jay and I did it together for about 2 years. And so you can go back through the archives and see all kinds of things and even the progression of this conversation. My website is nilsmith.com, where I kind of put all my content together. I've got a vlog on there as well where I pull up some content. So that's where you can find all that.
If you visit nickrunion.com, you're going to find my last post was in September of last year. So we cover all these things on the podcast. I'm going to make a pitch to you, Justin, afterwards to get a recording of this, and maybe this becomes one of our episodes. I really like our friend Katie Allred, who runs the Church Communications group on Facebook, which is an excellent resource and a great opportunity for ongoing engagement as well. So if you're accepted into the Church Communications group that she runs, there's opportunity for interaction with other people that are trying to figure out these same things. So kind of more as an ongoing, like get in there and figure it out resource, I'd definitely recommend that.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much for your time, for your conversation, and the contribution to the gathering. I know I've enjoyed talking and learning from you guys, and I'm sure everybody here at the gathering has as well. Thanks so much. God bless you. And just hang on while we stop the recording.